Welcome to the Process Breakdown Podcast, where we talk about streamlining and scaling operations of your company, getting rid of bottlenecks, and giving your employees all the information they need to be successful at their jobs. Now, let's get started with the show.
Dr. Jeremy Weiss here, host of the Process Breakdown Podcast, where we talk about streamlining and scaling operations of your company, getting rid of bottlenecks, and giving your staff everything they need to be successful at their job. I'm excited to introduce today's guest, Elizabeth Swan, who, if you want to actually have a streamlined company and be successful and problem solve, this is the person to talk to. But before I introduce Elizabeth officially, I'm going to tell you about today's episode is brought to you by Sweet Process. And now the question, Elizabeth, I always ask people is, have you had team members ask you the same questions over and over again? And it's maybe the 10th time you spent explaining it. Well, maybe you don't want to club yourself over the head, but maybe you're thinking about it because you know, it's the same thing over and over. But the solution, Sweet Process, is a software that makes it drop-dead easy to train and onboard new staff and save time with existing staff. And it's not just for universities, banks, hospitals, and software companies, but actually I discovered when talking to the founder, Owen, that first responder government agencies actually use them in life or death situations to run their operations. So you can use Sweet Process to document all the repetitive tasks that eat up your precious time so you can focus on growing your team and empowering them to do their best work. Through the podcast, you can sign up for a free 14-day trial, which no credit card is required. Go to sweetprocess.com. That's sweet like candy, S-W-E-E-T, process.com. Now, today we have Elizabeth Swan, who is the Chief Learning Experience Officer at GoLeanSixSigma.com. She is the co-author of the Problem Solvers Toolkit, which is a surprisingly simple guide to your Lean Six Sigma journey. I'm gonna have to get that in audio. Hopefully it's on audio, Elizabeth. And if you have not heard of Go Lean Six Sigma, you know, it's a web-based company headquartered in Hawaii with team members all over the US. They were on the Inc. 5000 list for 2019 and were named one of Hawaii's fastest 50 growing companies since 2016. And they combine the Lean methodology and Six Sigma to help organizations with problem solving. So Elizabeth, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Jeremy.
I wanted to start with, you have a unique methodology called DMAIC, but I want to start with giving people a little bit of background between what is the combination of Lean and Six Sigma.
Sure, it's a good question. So Lean is really associated with the Toyota production system. This was basically the beginning of what is known as lean manufacturing. So that takes us back to the 40s and the idea of removing waste from systems and relying on your people to become problem solvers. So you have a culture of problem solving. Mm. And this is tied up with Dr. Deming, who's a US quality guru, and lots of different folks had a lot of parts in creating what is now known as lean. Whereas Six Sigma is starting with Motorola in the 1980s with an engineer by the name of Bill Smith. And it also, like Lean, is based on the scientific method. Both of these are problem-solving methods with the same arc of looking at breaking down a problem, measuring it, and trying to figure out countermeasures to solve it. But the two different methods with Lean and Six Sigma are PDCA on the Lean side. That's plan, do, check, act, or adjust. And mm-hmm. then DMAIC that you mentioned on the Six Sigma side, that's define, measure, analyze, improve, and control. And the beginnings of Six Sigma were to reduce defects. Six Sigma means less than or 3.4 defects per million opportunities to make a defect. And Motorola originally applied this to their pager. So trying to get perfection out of that process. So
if only we could do that with all of our staff, right? and processes.
We would like that.
That's why they need Go Lean Six Sigma.
Exactly.
So I want to get my black belt, Elizabeth.
Do you? You want to jump right to
in
black.
In Go Lean Six Sigma.
So you want to jump past. There's the other thing that happened with the beginning of Six Sigma was these belt levels you're mentioning. So depending on where you look, it could be a white belt, then a yellow belt, then a green belt, then a black belt. I appreciate that you want to jump right to black. But these are sort of levels of knowledge, right, that you're bringing to the table.
Where do a lot of people start when they start with you? Do they automatically start in the beginning, or are some people more advanced or companies more advanced and they jump levels to maybe like yellow? Oh, this company like plugs into the yellow. Is there a commonality there?
No, it's a huge spread.
You start from the foundation. Most people just start from the foundation.
No, I'd say that it's a huge spread in terms of what people come and want to do. They might come in and say, you know, we leave the white belt, which is an hour, and the yellow belt, which is 8 hours. We leave those free. So people might want to just come in and go, okay, give me an hour. I got an hour to spare. I just want to know, what is this? They want everyone to become yellow belt trained so they can look for waste and solve problems. Or they've got a robust problem solving culture and they want people formally trained as green belt so they can run teams and solve problems and, you know, take it to another level. So there's a big range.
Mm-hmm. So let's break down. I know one thing that we want to talk about and is the process walks to get information. And that's, you mentioned a little bit the DMAIC process in general. So you want to just tell people what that stands for a little bit, and then we could start with the process walks.
Sure. So DMAIC is the acronym standing for define the problem, the process, the customer, and then measure, M for measure. Measure how, what's the baseline, you know, of this, if we have a problem, what's the magnitude. Analyze, which looks at both the process and the data, like why is this happening? And then I stands for improve, what can we do to counteract the root causes of this problem? And then C is control, which is how can we maintain these changes now that we've fixed this process? How do we hold on to the gains?
Yeah. And we'll break those down a little bit more. And if anyone's listening, you know, if you haven't gleaned, like you want to reduce errors and you want to be more efficient and have a more successful company, we will talk about some case studies, like the real bottom line where their process has helped save UC San Diego 2,000 hours a year in employee onboarding. They have saved healthcare companies millions and millions of dollars, government agencies millions and millions of dollars by what their process does. So it translates to real time saved in real dollars. I think there was a case study that I was reading on your site, Elizabeth, that is, it's a $4 million at the UCSD Medical Center. And those are real, you know, significant dollars. So just to talk about the gravity of the importance of this, of the process, right? So start off with the process walks, what that is. And it sounds like it fits into the first piece of DMAIC.
It does. So the first phase is defined. So you're trying to understand what is this process that isn't sort of behaving optimally. And one of the best ways to understand it is the process walk. And the process walk, the origins go back to the lean side of the house. And that's why the word Gemba was used in Japan. So that was the real place or the place where work is happening. And if you're thinking about Toyota, that might have been walking right down to where chassis are coming through on assembly lines and people are adding doors. So watching exactly how people do what they do. Mm. So now you take it back to most of the world has applied Lean and Six Sigma or Lean Six Sigma to the manufacturing world. Most of it's happening right now in the transactional world. So the looking at process that you were just describing in hospitals and governments. And we need to understand those processes too. We have to go to the place. Now, what if the place is online? What if this is a remote process and I need to see what people's computer screens are showing me? So the idea is just like you would walk into the area where work is happening, you can sort of virtually walk with, you know, Zoom or an iPhone or something else to watch how people do what they do, how they enter information, where it goes. I mean, you're still talking and interviewing people. So a process walk is a series of interviews of the people in the process. So you've got to do some planning to figure out what's the overall process, what are the big steps, and who should be interviewed. And you do it as a group, and you do it with kind of no expectations. You're not there to say, wait a second, what do you mean you pressed that button? You're not supposed to be doing that. You're just listening to see
what are they actually. That's probably hard to do.
Amen. Oh, it is, right. I mean, and companies like Process Street that, you know, are into process documentation, you're going to have to catch me on that. So a company like Sweet Process, when they document a process, when people document a process, they're often finding out there's kind of other routines going on that we didn't know. Or we documented it, but it's been a few months or it's been a year and people are started doing something else. So the process walk can surface what are those other things that are going on so that we can document those and be more accurate with our recording.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense because you can't improve the process or make it better if you don't walk through every step of what's going on now.
No, yeah, you just said a great thing. So you want to build your profound knowledge of the process, right? Because, you know, we get big, we get siloed, I do my thing, I pass it off to you, I kind of don't know what you do. So this is that moment where we say, all right, let's really listen to each other and interview each other and understand what do you do and what's painful about what you do. You know, like, well, I get this and I actually have to clean it up because, you know, it's not in the right format. And it's like, well, we didn't know that. What is the right format?
Right. So that's the D part. Go on with the M.
Great. So one of the things you're asking is, you know, how long does it take you to do this? You know, the actual work of this process. And you're trying to start building measurements. You're trying to understand what's the work time involved here and what's the wait time. So one big discovery is how little time is spent actually doing something of value and how much time is spent waiting for information, waiting for someone else to give you stuff. So those measurements help you understand where is the waste. Or another thing you're measuring is how often do I have to redo it, right? So redos are defects, and that's the Six Sigma side of the house, looking at how do we reduce that? How do we prevent those mistakes from happening? So the measure phase is baselining. How long does this take from the moment I get the application, you know, from somebody who's, or say a manager wants to hire someone. So the moment they open a position to the moment that person is hired, what is that lead time and what's going on? What's the work involved and what's the wait involved?
Yeah. And we'll talk about probably an onboarding example in a little bit, because there's probably a lot of that in there, a lot of waste and waiting, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And then what's the A?
So A is analyze. So now you have, and these things are done in a seemingly linear fashion, define it, measure it, analyze it. But you're also, you might be analyzing all along the way. You started measuring and define, right, to get your baseline. So you're now taking stock of, okay, in the process walk, we discovered all these pain points where people were waiting, where people were redoing things. And now we've got all this measurement we took in the measure phase. We've got data. So let's look at this data and say, what is it telling us? Where's most of the rework happening? Where's most of the wait time? Well, looks like we send this off to a supervisor for approval, and it could be 2 weeks before we hear back because they're out in the field and they don't have time. So we waited 2 weeks for that to happen, and then we asked, well, how often does a supervisor say no? How often is that approval denied? And they'll say, oh, never. Yeah, no, it's really just, you know, to let them know. We say, well, maybe we just turn that around and say, okay, we can let them know and then move on and don't wait the 2 weeks. So those are the discoveries you're looking for with both your data and your process.
Is there another simple solution that you've discovered or found organizations discover? Like, that's a really good example of, well, we're waiting for approval, but did they ever not approve it? And the answer is no. Well, then just move on. Is there another good example that sticks out to you of just cutting down or eliminating that waiting period?
You mean example like the approvals that you don't really need?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a constant. Mm-hmm. And also, here's another one. We had, this is a hospital. This was a mobile device team. And their job was to set up a mobile device for everyone who was hired. And if you think about it, that's critical. You need people to be able to communicate, doctors, right. Nurses, you know, that's a big deal. And it was taking weeks for people to get their devices. So we're trying to understand what's the big deal there. And one of the discoveries, and this we come up with a lot, is that the form said they had to get a VP's approval on top of their supervisor's approval. And they said, well, we don't really need that anymore, but it takes too long to change forms. There's a forms department. You have to submit the change you want to make, and that just takes, you know, months and months. So we haven't bothered with that. But then people are still chasing around trying to find VPs. And this was Alberta. So this was, you know, massive territory with lots mm-hmm. of people, far-flung hospital systems. So they finally got down to, okay, let's change the form and pull that signature line off. So right. that doesn't, you know, but the other one was also the same thing. The supervisors never said no. So they turned it into, we'll call it opt out, right? That's yeah. another good technique people use and say, you're just so you know, this employee has just applied for an iPhone. And if you have a problem with that, let us know. Otherwise we're moving on.
Right. You're eliminating these bottlenecks that, yeah. and it's funny because the hurdle, they didn't even want, you know, it just stayed there because it was too much of a hurdle to even eliminate that step.
Yeah. They looked at it and went, oh, as soon as you say the word forms, forget it. We're not even dealing with it.
Right.
It's like forms are driving whole processes, which is crazy.
Wow. So check your forms. What can you eliminate, I guess? So anything else on analyze before we get to the I?
Analyze is a place where, depending on the corporate culture or the organizational culture, you can get stuck in analysis paralysis and sort of keep looking at data and keep digging. Or you have a culture that is just do it. Like they might say, well, we discovered this, here's a fix, without really verifying that's a problem. So one mm-hmm. of the things you've got to do is verify. So is this truly the root cause of this? Of this issue and feel solid about that before you move on to developing your improvements.
Got it. And so the I.
So the I is the fun part. That's where people want to go as soon as they start in the define phase.
Like, let's skip everything. Skip
everything. Let's just fix it. So that's kind of another shift in problem solving mentality that happens when you learn Lean Six Sigma is to do your homework so that you don't have to do it twice. Because if you jump right to improve and you do the thing you think would fix it, you're off in, well, you're, first of all, you're spending time. The odds of it working aren't good. And then you have to go do it again. So you could make things worse. So getting that discipline amongst folks to really do that digging and the process walk is so great for that. Because that's when people make the discoveries and form relationships with other people that they hadn't really talked to that much. So then their horizons are broadened. They realize, oh, it isn't just this is the problem. Actually, it goes deeper than that. So they start to broaden the way they look at things, which is what you want. So by the time you get to improve, you should have really been expansive with who you spoke with, what you studied, what you poked at. And so that when you come to creating countermeasures to address those root causes, they're going to be solid. They're going to fix the process once and for all.
Can you, Elizabeth, expand on, so I'm sure there's a lot of, like you said, people just want to jump right to improvement. Can you talk about an example of the mistake that occurred or the errors that occurred when someone jumped right to improvement instead of going through the proper steps?
Where yeah. We just had a lot of these. We also teach at UC San Diego. So we have people doing online Greenbelt and then they have a discussion board. So we'll mm-hmm. ask them what was, you know, an unintended consequence of mm-hmm. an improvement that someone just jumped right to it.
Right. Because I could see myself doing that for sure. Be like, okay, well, I think this is the solve, you know, this will solve it and not going through those steps. So
yeah, there's one I just was listening to. they eliminated, I think it was a sales position, and they ended up giving the steps to non-salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was, you know, obvious they had too many people doing the process, so they said we'll just make it easy. We'll fix it by giving the job to these non-sale folks. But the non-sales folks were not being measured the same way the sales folks were measured. Mm. So they just weren't following through. There was nothing counting.
There was no motivation. Different motivations.
No. So a lot of times, if you jump to solution, you're not looking at the unintended consequences. What are the repercussions of doing this?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's good. Thank you for clarifying that. If there's anything else on improvement, or if not,
so improve again. Yeah. And you may have been finding what we call quick wins along the way.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't have to wait all the way until you get to the improve phase to say, well, we can, you know, stop reviewing this twice, that it clearly isn't, you know, providing any value. So let's stop that now. But now you want to, you also may have something that you need to pilot. So we, especially in hospitals and places where there's a, you know, higher risk for if you change a process, what could be the repercussions? So we'll do things like walkthroughs. Like, okay, if we're now going to remove these pieces of information from a form, how's that impact the patient? So let's do a walkthrough. Let's get a nurse. Let's get someone to stand in for the patient. Let's get somebody from intake. Let's walk this process and see how exactly does it work. And then you'll start to realize as you walk through, like, oh, we hadn't thought about what if they had a question here. So okay, so we have to add that information. Or oh, but the patient won't know this. Well, maybe we can put a whiteboard. We can put that on the whiteboard. Okay, great. That's the way to. So you walk through these so you can see what are all the permutations that will happen now that we have changed this process.
Mm, yeah, I like that. Because an objection may be like, well, there's a lot of bureaucracy. This will be impossible to do. But there's ways to do it without fully changing something. There's modifications of those changes, I guess.
Yeah. And like you just said, you're up against bureaucracy. So if you pull other people from different departments in to help you walk it through to see how this is going to work, you also have now included them in the solution. They are now part of it. They are helping you problem solve. They're helping you think about any unintended consequences, and they own it now. They care. They want to see you and the process succeed, and that is huge.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things when I was looking through case studies about, Golean Six Sigma, what stuck out to me was the bureaucratic organizations you work with. I'm like, wow, if they could deal with these organizations, anyone can deal with them, because you go across education, government, and healthcare and nonprofits. So I was like, okay, they deal with a lot of bureaucracy in general.
They do. Yeah. We do. And I think you raise a really good point about those institutions and bureaucracy, because if you think about like government, if something goes wrong, right, in a process, somebody gets sued, somebody has an accident, or let's approve something they shouldn't have approved, what happens is we put in a layer of approval.
Yeah.
Right. So we just keep adding and adding and adding. And those are all because of one thing. And we don't try to remove the source of it. We often just keep adding layers and layers of approval. It takes longer and longer and longer. And then you get that classic reaction to, oh my God, I don't want to do a government process because it's going to be forever. So we're trying to help them peel those layers away.
Mm-hmm.
But what's amazing is it's very possible. Governments everywhere. I was shocked at how many states are doing Lean Six Sigma. It is amazing. And what they're able to do is impressive. And because I had the same attitude, I'm like, oh really, government, this is going to be torturous.
Right. What about the C?
So C is control, and it actually started without a C. It got added. But what people found was back to that excitement of improve, which we kind of want to just go there, man, immediately. Yeah. But we also want to like leave as soon as we're done. Like, well, fixed. We're out of here. Like, that was awesome. We shortened that by months and we reduced the defect rate to nothing. We are good. And they walked away and didn't measure and keep an eye on the new process. And what would happen was maybe old versions of the form came out or people forgot that there was a new standard for doing it. So they reverted to the old standard. And it's like it comes down from the rafters, like entropy. Entropy is alive and well. So you have to put monitoring steps in place so that you keep an eye on it.
Everything goes to disorder, pretty much.
It does, yeah. Second law of thermodynamics is alive and well.
That's the only thing I got out of my physics class in college. So,
well, like it's
this
important.
Moment, understanding what you just said.
it's what we're battling all the time.
Yeah. You know, I picture Elizabeth, like the control part, you know, when you said, okay, I'm done. I picture a surgeon, you know, just did like a major surgery and someone closes them up and like, okay, like send them home. You know, like they do a monitoring of, is this person, you know, in a certain period of time, you know, how are they going to react to the surgery, et cetera. So, you know, it just made me laugh internally because it's similar to someone just putting the improvement in place and then just stepping away and leaving.
See ya. Yeah. Good luck. Good luck with the new kidney.
Exactly. I hope it takes.
hope it takes.
So let's talk about a few examples. And there's one that sticks out to me because it could work for this, it could work for anything, but there's a pothole repair example.
Yeah, that one was interesting because back to that idea of measuring, this is San Antonio, this is the city of San Antonio, and they basically had a process where if someone called, then they said, there's a pothole in this street, and they put it in the process, and they responded, right? So they thought they were, doing it within, I've forgotten what the original time frame was, but it was like, you know, realistic. But then they said, okay, what was the satisfaction rate with how the city was doing? And it was 38%. And they thought, well, how can that be?
Why
I just realized it's 48 hours. They were repairing potholes in 48 hours.
Seems pretty good.
I thought that was great. So they were meeting that service level 98% of the time. So why did they have a 38% satisfaction rating? And what they found was that people felt like, why are you waiting for us to call you and tell you there's a pothole? Why aren't you just fixing them when they happen?
Good point.
Yeah, so it was really more a shift in the attitude about who's responsible for even seeing these things.
Mm.
So they shifted and they said, okay, so we're going to now become the monitors of our roads ourselves. And when we see a pothole, we are going to fix it immediately. So that was huge. They went and they fixed more, right? So before they're waiting for a report. So now you're waiting for someone to say, hey, there's a pothole, as opposed to what a lot of us do is we just like, well, this street's getting bad. Yeah, I worry about my chassis, but I'm not calling the city, you know, like just think about your own behavior. So when they started doing it themselves, they went from repairing 13,000 potholes in 1 year to repairing 75,000 potholes when they did this project. That's 480%. And on the one hand, it's like, wow, you guys got a lot of potholes, but also it means they probably had a lot fewer the year after, right? Because some of these had been sitting around for a long time.
Right.
So that's 480% better, which is pretty good.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, in Chicago, you can dial. That makes me think of, you know, you can get graffiti removed in 24 hours. They'll come out, they'll remove it on if you see it in an area and you just dial a number. But it makes me think, well, are they even monitoring where it is and just going and fixing it? Or are they waiting for the calls? So,
Yeah. And I think that was a big shift way back in New York. Bill Bratton, when he was the police chief there, it went to what you're describing. It was, we're not going to wait to hear about it. We're going to be vigilant. And the minute there's one piece of graffiti, it's gone.
Yeah. Talk about UC San Diego. I mentioned it, saving 2,000 hours a year.
Okay, so UC San Diego, they were looking at their onboarding process. So the problem they're originally looking at is, you know, the hiring managers, it was taking a really long time to fill out all the forms. So once again, why does everything come back to a form?
Yeah.
So they said that, you know, the median time, so that's another way you can measure average, or you can measure the median, what's in the middle, you know, it was 7 days, but they said, well, 25% of the process, took 20 to 104 days. So I think there's a joke, like the average age of a diaper wearer is 40 years old, right? So it's clearly it's infants and the aging, right, but so these middle numbers can hide often like what's really going on. So these, so finding out that the
that's a good saying. I like that.
Well, it just reminds you of you can really hide things with numbers. Like, yeah, okay, we looked at the middle, but that didn't really tell us what the worst case, and people were waiting a long time.
Right.
And they had, they were hiring, you know, just looking at 184 email notifications per new hire, right? So they had 40 managers to hire. And then you just start multiplying that. Like, you just think about your own, you know, inbox. It's like, that's just a lot of time spent going back and forth on emails. So they were looking at, another classic tool we use is a fishbone diagram. Fishbone diagram. So that is looking at why things are. Why are we taking so long? Why is onboarding, you know, often taking up to 104 days? People basically didn't know what was happening in the onboarding workflow. They didn't realize that there were 184 emails being generated. You know, that helped them come up with ways to educate folks on all the non-value added steps that they were doing. Like all the things that non-value add is a really classic term in our world where we really poke at things and say, you know, we're doing this in the process now. Is it adding any value to the customer? Is that, and that's a very specific view of a process step. Like we are, what we find is people say, well, we need to do that. Or I have to do that. I have to check that, you know, otherwise it might be wrong. And we're saying, yeah, but why didn't we find a way to make sure this wasn't wrong in the first place? Or is that the only way we can do things with 184 emails? Like, are we really adding value doing that? So they ended up creating a reference guide, you know, simply once again, back to that process walk, you walk the process, you find out what it really needs. You find out what it doesn't need, and then you document, you know, here's the guide, here's how it works, this is what you should do, and then people can follow it, and they have confidence, like, well, here's a guide, I can follow this. And they dropped, in terms of the, you know, the money they were spending, if you think about just in pure labor hours, that was $50,000 in annual labor, and they saved, you know, 413 labor hours just in those removing the 184 emails per hire. So that they saved, you know, pre-improvement was costing about $86,000 per employee. And then I dropped it down to 28,000.
Wow.
So just
huge savings per employee.
Yeah. And a lot of it was,
and it's a better experience, you know?
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. They're not, I mean, yeah, a lot of these are painful. That's what we find out in the process walk. And they're doing what they're being told, and it's evolved over years, but it's painful. Like answering all those emails, that's painful.
You know, so first of all, Elizabeth, thank you. And I have one last question, but I want to point people to go to GoLeanSixSigma.com and check out what they have. And I'll just have you briefly tell people where they can kind of, you have different things that they can engage in on your site and in the company. So I'll have you talk about that for a second, and then we'll finish it off with your all-time favorite books It could be related to Lean or Six Sigma, and both. And obviously, people can check out the Problem Solvers Toolkit, which you're the co-author of. So just start, Elizabeth, with where should people start on Go Lean Six Sigma, and what other things do you have available there?
So it's a great question. Where should they start? There's actually, the menu has start here, you know, and you asked me those questions right up front. What is Lean Six Sigma and how does it work, and which is better, Lean or Six Sigma, which training's right for me? So there's all these great, sort of pages of really basic information, like what is this? And we described it before. There's lots of trainings, and the belt levels basically are levels of information. So you can get free hour-long white belt training, get free 8-hour yellow belt training, or move on, become a team lead with green belt, or really work to get, you know, stat skills with black belt. There's also different formats. All this is online. There's also what we call flipped classroom training. And flipping the classroom means that whereas teachers used to be tasked with lecture, we're saying, well, the student can go learn that on their own online and ingest that technique and those concepts and take a few tests to sort of feel like they've mastered it. And then let's get together as a remote group and let's talk through application. Like, what does that mean in your world? What process are you defining and you're going to work on? So flipped classroom or other forms of, you know, remote workshops with groups. We also have membership subscriptions. So you can get access to the books, the guides. We have 100+ templates. You can also get access to lots of single modules. Like, what if you wanted to learn about the fishbone diagram we just talked about, or how to avoid unintended consequences, or how to collect data? So if you just want to learn one specific thing, you can get membership and get access to probably, I think the membership is like $199, and the single modules themselves are worth over $600 already. Nice. There's also success stories. You've been asking about some great ones, so you can look at those by industry to see what have other people done and how they do it, and you know, what works. And I think it is inspiring to see it happening in government and in education and also healthcare. But we have them all over the place. And then the last menu item is resources, where we have a super active blog. We have lots of, we write, we also have lots of colleagues who write about things like what I'm talking about today, the process walks and different aspects of Lean Six Sigma. There's webinars. Tracy and I do webinars every month, deep dive on topics. This month, we're going to be talking about the A3, which is a problem-solving document, and how leaders can coach problem solvers using this. And we're going to talk about doing it remotely, obviously really key for people to be able to do things remote right now. And the templates are there, tools for organization. We have glossaries. Our whole sort of credo is to make this accessible. There can be kind of an aura of engineering or other language to this, and we just make it simple. Like, it's really just problem solving. It's not that complicated, so we try to break things down. So we've got glossaries, recommended books, and a podcast and things like that people can.
Nice. So everyone check out goleansixsigma.com. And so let's run out with your favorite books of all time. Could be Lean related, Six Sigma, both, that people should check out.
Yeah, I go all over the place. I read so heavily. There's a great one that I discovered a while back called The Checklist Manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
And that is by Atul Gawande, who is a surgeon. And he basically talked about how making a checklist transformed the medical world. Just having that checklist to say, you know, has the surgeon done this? Has the nurse done this?
Yes. Yeah. Right? Yes. Right? I've listened to that one. Yeah.
That's a game changer, I find. And he's a lovely writer, so that was a great one. And it really spoke to me. I mean, that he was documenting a process, right? So that was a great one. There's a there's a great one out, The Coaching Habit, Michael Bungay-Stanier, and he just wrote another one called The Advice Trap, and that is about changing the way we interact and asking more questions as opposed to telling people more. So do more asking, do less telling. I call it the mix between inquiry and advocacy. And I think a lot of us get stuck in trying to explain things to people and sort of put ideas out there and try to get our point across, whereas we actually have a lot more impact if we ask and lead by inquiry. And that changed a lot of the way I operate. And so there's the original one, The Coaching Habit, new one out now called The Advice Trap.
Nice. So
those are two. And then there's some classics, The Toyota Way. Mm-hmm. Was just a game changer and great to read.
What else do you consider classics? I remember listening to The Toyota Way in audio books in my car. People don't even know what cassette tapes are, probably, if you're listening to this. But yeah. Any other classics people should check out?
Yeah, The Toyota Way is a classic, and it's a series now. So there's the Toyota Way for service excellence. Mm-hmm. And that one I love because, as I said, you know, you came from manufacturing, but really now the bulk of process improvement being done in the service industry. So I love that one. There's Learning to See. That's a classic about another guy who was John Shook, who was at Toyota in the early years, and how to use, again, that A3 to understand processes. That's the classic. Let's see, what are some other classics? I'm just looking at my list. Engagement Equation. These are two consultants who worked there as kids, like really when they were 19 years old, at the first Toyota plant in Kentucky. And so it was when Toyota brought their methods and their culture to the U.S., you know, and there's a big question of, well, how's that going to work? So the people had to rotate back and forth between the U.S. and Japan and, you know, understand how does this work, because the culture is one of no blame, right? You want to surface problems. And if you've been raised in a culture where the what you've been told by your boss is, don't bring me problems, bring me solutions, then you may not be in the habit of mentioning when things are wrong. And the culture there is you have to say when things aren't going wrong. That's your job, is to point out problems. And that's a real shift. And that's not, it's, people aren't comfortable with it, especially if, you know, they are fearing punitive action for pointing out things that are wrong. So that one, I think, really brought home to me what that meant to how do you bring those cultural pieces? How do you work toward that?
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, Elizabeth, I want to be the first one to thank you. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and breaking everything down so thoroughly. Really appreciate it. Everyone can check out goleansixsigma.com. Also check out Sweet Process if you want to document all your repetitive tasks that eat up your precious time and your team's time so you can focus on growing. And you can plug that in to the DMAIC, you know, the whole methodology as well. So thank you and have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Thank you, Jeremy. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Process Breakdown Podcast. Before you go, quick question. Do you want a tool that makes it easy to document processes, procedures, and/or policies for your company so that your employees have all the information they need to be successful at their job? If yes, sign up for a free 14-day trial of Sweet Process. No credit card is required to sign up. Go to sweetprocess.com, sweet like candy, and process like process.com. Go now to sweetprocess.com and sign up for your risk-free 14-day trial.